Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to meet a veteran music educator who saw the need for arts and cultural programs in our schools and communities and founded Arts NCT, a nonprofit New Haven-based academy serving all of Connecticut with classes, workshops, professional development, guest artists, and residents from early childhood to their golden years who want to engage in a variety of performing and visual arts experiences. Then we're going to circle back to chat with the director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative to find out the latest information that agency is working with, including important data details that are emerging from the 2020 census. And we're going to close with the Connecticut Yankee Council talking about scouting, the many opportunities that scouting offers to adolescents, teens, and young adults, and how to get involved. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Hey, veterans. Have you heard that AARP has launched a new tool to bring together valuable information and resources to help you, military families, and their caregivers navigate their health care options? The Veterans and Military Families Health Benefits Navigator provides Connecticut's veterans with critical information about what's required to qualify for health care benefits from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs or Department of Defense. You know, nearly 60% of all veterans are eligible for VA health care services, but less than half of those eligible veterans use those benefits. So for more information on this new Health Benefits Navigator and other resources for veterans, visit aarp.org/veterans. Well, we've been really lucky to have a number of arts organizations and cultural arts programs featured here on the award-winning For the People over the past few months as the as these organizations begin to sort of re-engage with their communities to be able to have people in for lessons and workshops and performances. And we are so glad to hear and learn about an organization called Arts NCT or Arts in Connecticut. And their founder, Barbara Alexander, has graced us with her presence on the program to kick things off this morning here because they are celebrating some really exciting news, a brand new location. They have just relocated to 351 McKinley Avenue in New Haven. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and all you need to know about this 501c3 nonprofit arts organization that's providing arts integration for core and STEAM programs in schools across all of Connecticut. We will tell you how to engage this organization at your school, in your community. Barbara, welcome to the program. Great to meet you and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. We appreciate that.
So this organization kind of got off the ground in 2016, but give us a little bit of history and lead up. Are you an artist, a painter, a singer, somebody who does it yourself, or did you just see a need and go for it?
Well, of course, it's a long-standing tradition. Coming from 1994, I graduated from Jackson State University with classical music. I'm a music educator. I've been a music teacher now for well over 30 years. I first got my first certification in Florida, and then we came on over to Connecticut. I was originally, starting at the Alexander Music Studio, and that took off, and it kept migrating over to the Performing Arts Academy of Connecticut, which was incorporated in 2014. And as I saw a great need, I then established a nonprofit organization, which is Arts in Connecticut, in 2016.
And were you already at that point housed somewhere semi-permanent, or was the move to McKinley Avenue and this new facility that you have your actual first kind of headquarters or base of operations?
So we had a facility at 131 Bradley Road in Woodbridge as the Performing Arts Academy of Connecticut. And then when I migrated and got the nonprofit in 2016, we were over at 64 Ridge Street in Milford. We had a school there. And since this time they rezoned, and as they rezoned, we had to find a new home, and COVID hit all at the same time. So now we are over at St. Brendan, St. Aidan's Old School, and we're very excited to have like 8 classrooms. So we're really happy about that.
Well, that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit more, because now you've just hosted this big open house. Tell us a little bit about that event, which happened last week, and how the integration and the meeting of folks from the greater New Haven community, how that is going to help facilitate how you hope to really take off again with in-person arts and cultural activities this fall and winter and on into 2022.
Absolutely. Well, we were very, very excited to get a chance to meet with our community and public on last Sunday, and hopefully we'll be able to do something else on the inside as weather is starting to change. But we did get a chance to have quite about 90 people to sign up and come and visit us. And, you know, we put out several different games, but more importantly, we were able to have them engage in free classes so they can get a chance to see the artists that are teaching at the Performing Arts Academy so they can be able to start to sign up for those classes. So at the Performing Arts Academy, we will be having music programs, arts, visual arts, theater programs of all ages. So I don't want you to always think kids, because we do have programs for adults as well as dance. The dance instructors were former Alvin Ailey dancers, so that was a very nice uptick, and people were, oh my goodness, well received, and it was fun to see how the people got up on their feet, completely engaged. You can see some of the pictures on our Facebook page as we just posted them. So that'll be very exciting to see. I mean, it was so happy to see how much young and old, all generations were out there moving.
That's awesome.
So it was so exciting to have that. Very good.
Well, we want to let people know that they can go to artsnct.org to help support this organization with donations, to learn about new and upcoming programs, to get involved as volunteers. I know that you have a lot of really talented people who are already committed to your organization as instructors.
Absolutely.
And teachers. But I'm sure you are always happy to meet new and more of them.
Absolutely. So Arts in Connecticut, just to give you a little history, Arts in Connecticut originally started as an outreach program. We saw the needs in schools. We noticed that arts wasn't coming to us. We had to go to them. They didn't know who we were. So we just sort of assessed the needs of finding out what was going on in our schools and our communities, and what did they need, and how can we help? How can we empower the children, and how can we empower our local community so we can be able to be an asset? So I took the professional artists throughout the state of Connecticut. We combined together, which is now over 2,000 artists. And then we go into not only schools, but libraries, daycare centers, community centers, senior centers, wherever there is a need for arts. We go in, we sit down, listen to what you want. We customize our needs to fit what you want and your budget. So it's a win-win situation when you come to Arts in Connecticut. So this way we can be able to serve as many people as possible and provide great artistic programs.
So you guys don't just have a ton of talented artists who are engaging in communities across Connecticut and in organizations, like you said, senior centers, recreation centers, schools. But you also have been recognized by some, you know, greater, more statewide, regional, and national artists who are happy to come in as guests. You have some guest artists scheduled for some programs going into the end of the year and the beginning of 2022?
Absolutely, absolutely. So right now, we have Derek Barnes, who is an award New York Times bestseller, Scholastic author. He will be doing speaking and reading with the children and talking to them about his books. And so therefore, we're also doing an author series for minority Black authors in the month of March, where we're bringing in multiple authors, not only Derek, but several other authors right here in our area. You will be surprised at the number of professional artists that we have right under our nose. So we're so excited. We have gotten a chance to combine and partner with Jai Studios, Michael J. White. And as he called us for various artists and things, we'll do some type of collectives with them. So we're really excited about the new upcoming things that's coming up. And we're talking with schools now to do some artists and residency programs so we can see how we can be more of an asset to our community. And we're not forgetting our seniors. I love the seniors. The seniors and the babies always have my heart. And so we are definitely coming in, doing some makeup, arts, ballroom, dancing, you name it. They come to us and say, hey, can you guys do this? Of course we can. Because you got to remember, everything is an art. So we don't just have visual arts and performing arts. We cannot forget edible arts, consumer arts, industrial, engineering, and so forth. So we really try to bring a whole large spectrum of what is needed for our community and just sort of be a greater asset so we can shed some light, especially in these pandemic times.
Well, since you launched the organization in 2016, Barbara, you moved around a few times, and finally you're at a place you can actually kind of call home that has a great deal more permanence to it. Can you tell us a little bit more about the facility where you're at now? You said it offers some classroom space, but what are your plans for the actual new Arts and CT home there in New Haven?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I have a whole lineup for you. So in the mornings from 9 to 11, now we haven't started this as of yet. Right now we have sign up. So it says get involved. That's where you're going to sign up. That first link for classes that you would like to see right there. But from 9 to 11, we really wanted to cater to our mommy and me crew. And that's where they'll get a chance to come in for some different classes, whether it's painting, dance, or play acting or art, so you name it. That's going to be happening at that time. From 11 to 1, you have the seniors coming in and homeschool opportunities for homeschoolers to come in and have different arts programs as well. From 11 to 1 and 1 to 3. From 3 to 6, I'm sorry, we will be having after-school programs. So if you're looking for different programs for your children to be able to interact once they get out of school and you want something for them, then that's the time for you to come in and sign your kids up. Well, actually go online, because, you know, everything has changed a little bit, and the building is secure, so you do have to do everything online. And then from 5 to 9, that's where we have all age programs happening at that time. So we are now asking people to sign up so we can be able to know which programs to implement first. So we have such an array of programs. We really are giving the community the opportunity now to sign up. And let us know what you want. Give us your age group. And as we get enough people to sign up for these classes will be launching immediately.
Well, that's great. Now, I just wanted to review some community-specific goals, because there are some opportunities there for free programming, especially for low-income and at-risk youth. And one of them involves musical theater. So I'm kind of getting a feeling we're going to be hearing some strains of West Side Story or In the Heights or something going on at Arts and CT coming up.
As a matter of fact, that was our last show before COVID, was In the Heights. So we have a sliding scale for our musical theater. That's our strongest strength. Coming from, well, that was, I would say that was one of our greatest passions, coming from the Milford side of things, where we have a sliding scale for those who have a certain income level. You can apply for a scholarship program so you can be able to take part in our theater programs. It's not only for low income, it is for all socioeconomic levels, so you can audition for any of the theater productions. As a matter of fact, that will be happening very, very soon. So you need to be on the lookout for those auditions and upcoming programs. You will be seeing something on our social media. So if you haven't been following us, you got to follow us. It's Arts and CT. Whether you're on Facebook, it's our facebook.com/ArtsandCT. If you're on Twitter, it's Arts and CT. I believe it's 2016. If you're on Instagram, it's Arts and CT 2016. If you're on TikTok, is Arts and CT. So Arts and CT is all over the place. This way you'll get a chance to keep up with us, what's going on, what's happening, how can you register, how can you audition, how can you get involved. Everything is not an audition. There may be some other basic class programs where it'll teach you how to be able participate in various theater programs, not just musical theater, but we will also have stage plays as well. So please take time, sign up for classes that you want. If you want Shakespearean classes, sign up for them now. This is your opportunity to make the Performing Arts Academy something that you want for our community.
And in the last few minutes that we have with you, Barbara, also opportunities for artists to become better themselves. One of your big goals is to offer professional development for local artists.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Now we're going to be working with the state of Connecticut in training our artists in professional development training, so therefore they can be keeping up with the state mandates of arts and education and implementing arts integration to schools all throughout the state of Connecticut. So we are very, very excited, and we do have one coming up very soon, which is why it's so important for all professional artists sign up and join with Arts in Connecticut. You will find that link under Get Involved under the artsnct.org page. When you look under Get Involved, it will say Join Our Team, and that's when we want you to join us. We will receive your information there in that artist directory, and we'll be contacting you very soon.
Excellent. Well, Barbara Alexander is the founder of Arts and CT. ArtsNCT.org is their website, where you can support this organization with donations, hook up for volunteerism, hook up for professional development. If you're an artist or if you are someone of any age who's interested themselves or interested in getting their children or someone they love involved in the arts, this is the one-stop shop to do it. They've got their brand new headquarters that they've just occupied in New Haven, Connecticut. Arts and CT, designing high quality programs focusing on arts integration, education, community empowerment, workforce development. They've got 80 plus creative programs, and also engaging across the state of Connecticut with school performances, after school programs, and partnering with public libraries, summer camps, senior centers, even restaurants. If you're interested in connecting with the arts, connect with Barbara Alexander. Barbara, it was great to meet you this morning, and we can't wait.
It was a pleasure meeting you as well. Thank you.
Yeah, we can't wait to talk to you again. Artsandct.org, folks, get involved. Barbara, thank you so much. Folks who regularly listen to the program will recall way back in 2020 and even before that, we hosted a series on the program called Counting on 2020 Census Segments. And we did a lot of public information and outreach and background on the 2020 census, talked to some people about engagement and how that was going to roll out and what folks needed to know here in Connecticut as they participated. Since then, all of that data has been collected and compiled and crunched. And finally, just a few weeks ago, some new information has been refined and released. And we are pleased to have on the program Michelle Rorden-Nold. She's the executive director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative and the Census State Data Center, in short, CT Data, their website, ctdata.org, if you're interested in heading there to find out more. CT Data offers a continuum of services to empower organizations to collect, analyze, interpret, visualize, and use their data and public data to make informed decisions. So, Michelle, as we talk to you a little bit when we first met you and introduced this organization probably like 7 or 8 months ago, refresh our memory about what this was all about and the lead up to it. Why does Connecticut and organizations and communities and individuals in the state need something like the Connecticut Data Collaborative?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me again. It's a pleasure to be back. Love talking about data. So what's important about the census decennial is that it gives us a count of our population in Connecticut and gives us important information that's used for the next decade that impacts economic development decisions. Businesses use this data to make decisions about expanding and where to locate. And then it's also used to help the state get federal dollars in, for billions of federal dollars are impacted by our counts and census data. So when we spoke last time, we were working on making sure that everybody came out and got counted. And of course, you know, the pandemic did hinder that. But now what we're looking at is the data is starting to be made public. And so our organization, we make that data accessible. And so we stress not just availability, we do provide raw spreadsheets, but we also provide lots of data visualizations and interactive visualizations that allow a user to go in, a resident of Connecticut to go in and take a look and say, what's, you know, the population in my town? You know, click on your town on a map and you can see the population. You can see a breakdown by race, ethnicity. And so our organization is really focused on democratizing access to public data and then providing the data in a format such that we can make informed decision making with data.
So is the entire foundation or underpinning of the CT Data Collaborative almost exclusively census demographics, or do you also incorporate, you know, for lack of a better term, other pots of information that mm-hmm. also kind of go into the creation of all of the products and sources that you have on your site?
Yeah, no, good question. We're not solely focused on census data. That's one piece of what we do, but we also help to make state data available and accessible to the public. So we have a lot of different data sets around that come from the State Department of Education. We have housing data sets. We have data on Department of Public Health data. We have data from the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, Department of Children and Families. So our mission is to democratize access to public data. So that includes federal census data, but it also includes state data. And we take this data and we will put it together, right? So looking at So, for example, we had somebody email us just last week asking us, why is the youth population in Hartford declining? And so what we did is we looked at the census data where it does show a decline, but we also married it with State Department of Education data and looked at the trends over time and the youth enrollment in public schools. So that's you know, one of our main roles is to put all these data together and figure out the story behind the numbers.
Now, how do municipal representatives utilize your information? You mentioned economic development, and certainly, you know, populations and demographics are very much tied to both, you know, nonprofit and public sector grants, as well as a lot of state, regional, or federal programs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have a product that we put out in partnership with Advanced CTs called the Town Profiles, and that provides towns with online. If you print it, it's, you know, front and back, but online it's two pages, and it's all kinds of information about the town. So it provides some demographic information, information on housing, information on the labor market. And, for example, we had a town last week, Stratford, who was applying for a grant, and they really wanted to understand in their in the labor market information we provide in the town profiles, and we show employment figures. Are those people who live and work in Stratford, or are those people who commute into Stratford, or are those people who live in Stratford and commute out for work, right? So there's, you know, our data does provide you with all of those different views of the labor market. But towns use it for planning purposes and also, like you said, to apply for grants.
There's a lot going on in Connecticut right now, both in the legislature and in communities across the state, trying to create more situations for affordable housing. And I see that one of the things on your site is a partnership with Desegregate Connecticut, providing a Connecticut zoning atlas. What's that all about?
Yes, that was a project we did earlier this year, right, in partnership with Desegregate Connecticut. So what they worked on was getting all of the zoning data from all 169 towns, and there's something like over 2,000 zoning districts in our state. And so that data was spread across all towns, 169 towns, and in all different kinds of formats, some available online, some available in PDFs. Some so old, they had to be recreated, the boundaries redrawn. So our primary purpose in that project was about building this tool to, again, to make that data accessible to the public, right? So that everybody has the data, and it's not just in the hands of a few people, but the public can go in and see zoning, their zoning districts in their towns and the different attributes. There's something like over 40 different attributes per zoning district. So we provide this tool that allows for easy, drilling down into your particular, street view of your town. If you're interested in the zoning district down to that level, or kind of at a 10,000 foot level, looking at the whole state and what does it look like. So our job there was to get the data out to the public and put in an accessible format so that everybody has access to it.
We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back to talk more with Michelle Rorden-Nold, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative, CT Data. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Our friends at Rita Grow have announced their fall 2021 lineup for their Popcorn and PJs virtual family storytelling events. The series kicks off Friday, October 29th at 7 p.m. with Crystal Kite award-winning author Valerie Bowling reading her musical book, Let's Dance. She's also going to chat with families about her process and lead children through an exploration of dance. You can purchase just the virtual link to this event or the full participants package that includes the link, hardcover book, popcorn, crayons, sketch pads, and more, shipped straight to the address of your choosing. If you'd like to learn more, you can just go to readtogrow.org. We're back. Thanks for hanging out. We're talking with Michelle Rorden-Nold. She's executive director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative. One of the other things I wanted to ask about was how or if your organization plays any kind of role in helping people understand how to actually access and use the information. Do you guys do any type of public training or information or workshops at ctdata.org?
Yeah, I love that you asked that, John, because when we first started out years ago, is about getting the data out there, making it accessible. But I soon realized that, you can make lots of data accessible, but doesn't mean that people know how to use it. So in 2017, we launched the CT Data Academy, and that is around building data literacy skills, so teaching people how to use the data. So we have a variety of workshops, and they're open to the public. We have a intro to public data workshop. We have survey design workshop, a data storytelling, data analysis, data visualization. All those are different workshops that we offer. But it's really important, to help people find and use data. And that is a core of our mission. And if people are interested, they can go to our website, ctdata.org, and they can find registration information about these workshops. And all of them, because of COVID, are being held virtually, so it doesn't require travel.
Great. And so we mentioned that you partnered with Desegregate Connecticut for the Connecticut Zoning Atlas, but do you also tap the vast resource of higher education and even, high school level academies and entities in Connecticut for kind of a collaborative participation when you're actually trying to build or refine or expand data sets that are being featured on in the Connecticut Data Collaborative website?
Yeah, we have a lot of partnerships. We work with Trinity College, and we've worked with them in the past on a project looking at the intersection of health and housing in Hartford. And we also work closely with UConn. We're on a couple projects. Looking at ACEs, Advanced Childhood Experiences, but the School of Social Work at UConn, we work closely with them, the School of Public Policy, that is really a key part of, who we are as an organization. I think together we're, better. Right. So I really do believe in, partnership and tapping into expertise of others and together coming up with a better product. So that is, most of our projects are in partnership with either other organizations or have a university component or expert, helping us in with the projects.
And I see there's also a conference coming up November 8th through the 10th, the CT Data Mini Conference. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we usually hold an annual conference, and last year we did a virtual conference for the first time. And this year, just, feeling fatigued from Zoom, we decided to make it a mini virtual conference, and we're going to have four sessions on three different days, two sessions on one day. And the focus of the conference, we're going to have the Census Bureau present on two different data tools and products that they put out. One is called Resiliency Estimates, and one is about the PULSE program. And the PULSE program is a survey that they conducted at the beginning of the pandemic to households and businesses. So they're going to present about that data. We have a discussion. We're going to hold a discussion about what we do at CT Data and share all the resources that we've worked on and information that we have. Just to make people aware of all the different services and tools that we have. There's going to be a discussion around, and this is really nitty gritty, but it's for the planners in the state, COGS, PUMA designations. That's publicly used micro data. Mm-hmm. So it's establishing different regions in the state for the aggregation of census data. And then we have one called Do No Harm in Equity. It's part of our Equity and Data Community of Practice. And we have a couple of guest speakers who are going to present about making sure that when you present and use data, you're not harming communities.
Very good. Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, let's circle back and just remind people about this, one of the latest projects that you've completed, which is the Census 2020 CT Data Hub. As we mentioned in the introductory remarks, it was a long time coming from the U.S. Census of 2020, all the necessary information that the Connecticut Data Collaborative needed to be able to put this part of your website together. But it is the newest and freshest and most topical information that folks might be interested in coming out of the 2020 census. In the last few minutes that we have, just let people know what that's all about and some of the ways that they might be able to use this latest census data for general information or for something that could be a highly targeted initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the data that came out was the redistricting data. So the purposes of the data file that the census released is for figuring out new boundaries for federal representation and state representation. So the data shows the 18 and under population and shows the 18 and over population, both by race and ethnicity. And then it also shows housing unit changes in the state. So we provided a couple of different tools on our site and analyses that show we generally talk about the population growth in towns and cities. Only 69 towns experienced population increase from 2010 to 2020. And overall, our state stayed pretty flat. It was a 0.9% increase, so not much of a change in our population over the decade. Mm. But when you dive into some of the town-level data, there are some interesting things to learn. Stamford jumped from the fourth largest city to the second largest city because of their population growth. They grew by almost 13,000 people. And Hartford actually was one of the cities that experienced a loss of residents. Hmm. So you can, if you go to our site, you can take a look at changes in population. You can also take a look at, we adopted a methodology by the Census Bureau and calculated a diversity index for every town in Connecticut. We look at the increase in housing, increase decreases in housing relative to population. And then we also look at what are the most common race or ethnicity categories reported on the census by town, what's the second most by town and third most by town. And all of these tools are, provided via interactive maps. So you can really, we also do provide the raw spreadsheets at all mm-hmm. the different geographic levels. But for, most people, just clicking on the map and getting the number is probably what most people will use.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for all the great information this morning. Folks, we're talking with Michelle Rorden-Nold. She is the executive director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative, ctdata.org, if you're looking for them on the web. Also, overseeing the Census State Data Center. You go to ctdata.org to explore data, over 200 data sets sorted by topic. You can tap into this official resource for census data and learn to understand how to make sense of census data. They can also help you improve your skills in data visualization, collection, analysis, and survey design. And if your organization has a specific need that doesn't quite match existing workshops that they offer, then they also can work with you to do some customized data training. Lots of great stuff going on at ctdata.org, the Connecticut Data Collaborative. And we thank you so much, Michelle, for spending some time with us this morning talking about it. We'll catch up with you again and talk data once again at some point in the future. Thanks for being part of the program. Well, as we wrap up today, we are going to talk scouting with our friend Mark Kraus, who's a scout executive and CEO of the Connecticut Yankee Council. You know, current and former scouts have always felt that scouting has made a difference in their lives. And recently, a study by Tufts University has found that scouting does, in fact, have a measurable positive impact in the character development of young people. And so with that in mind, we're going to talk a little bit about how you might be able to get involved in scouting, or maybe it's something that you did as a young person and you'd like to see your children or grandchildren or a young person that you know and care about get involved. So Mark, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
So now, when we talk about scouting in Connecticut, the Connecticut Yankee Council is pretty much it, right? I mean, this is the major scouting kind of hub for Connecticut, right?
Well, actually, John, there are four councils in Connecticut. Connecticut Yankee, we oversee scouting programs in Fairfield County and New Haven County. Then there is the Connecticut Rivers Council, which is based out of Hartford. And then you've got two much smaller councils, one, the Housatonic Council, which is based in Derby. And then you've got Greenwich Council.
Oh, okay. Well, how much interaction goes on among the four Connecticut councils in terms of coordination, recruiting, programming, and stuff like that?
Well, programming, there's constant conversation amongst the councils as far as trying to share programming and trainings and those type of things for adult leaders. When it comes to recruiting and fundraising, we are sole separate entities, and we have to focus on our own territories. But we just launched this year a major marketing campaign, a paid media campaign for the first time ever. We had a couple of donors step up to help us out with that. And so actually all the councils are benefiting from that because it's been broadcast pretty much all over the state of Connecticut. Mm. So I think we're somewhat responsible for something for everybody getting kids this fall. So.
Oh, that's great. So how does the Connecticut Yankee Council and Connecticut's other scouting councils kind of tap into or take advantage of the significantly greater national network of scouting organizations and councils across the country? I mean, do you guys kind of share best practices or invite each other to check out various facilities in other parts of the region or the country?
We do. There are currently 251 scout councils around the country. And if you think of us as kind of a franchise, that's how I see that we operate. We are a separate, we are under the umbrella of the national organization based in Irving, Texas, but Each of us has our own separate 501c3 status. We all have our own executive boards. We all have, you know, everything we do is we do our own, you know, tax filings and 990 filings and all of that. So we're really separate entities in a way under the umbrella of the national office, and we all do share best practices. There, prior to COVID, there used to be two national gatherings of all of the senior leadership as well as volunteer. A lot of the volunteers would go to these, and that's where you would really see a lot of the sharing of ideas and things. And, you know, I tell people a lot of times, that some of the best ideas that I've ever came up with, I borrowed from another council. So, and I'm happy to admit that sometimes because there are some great things going on around the country with councils all over the, you know, all over the country at this point. So
great. Well, we mentioned the Tufts study. It's one of a number that took a look at the advantages and benefits of scouting, not just for individuals who are engaged in it, but for communities in which scouting groups exist. From your perspective, how does joining Boy Scouts of America make a difference in a kid's life?
Well, as you mentioned, the Tufts study, and the Tufts study came out and said that, you know, after 3 years, any child that was in the program for 3 years had a significant impact and, you know, had higher increases in things of cheerfulness and helpfulness and kindness and obedience and all of that. There was other studies that were done, I want to say back in the 90s, that talked about how being in scouting, group studies, kids in scouting, kids not in scouting, and they compared grades as far as reading and math. And what those studies indicated were that kids in the program got significantly better grades in reading and math than kids in the control group that were not in in scouting. So, I mean, there's a lot of that. I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, what the kids learn. The great thing about scouting is that we're teaching kids to be prepared for life. And that's really what that's kind of our motto, prepared for life. But we do it in a way that they don't even realize what they're learning. It's because it's through things like camping and activities and doing things that they really enjoy to do. But it's all teaching them leadership skills and, you know, being able to take care of themselves, and that's really what the program really is about. And I think the other great thing about the program and our council in particular, we have a phenomenal Scout Reach program. And our Scout Reach program, Scout Reach is designed to serve kids in the urban and rural areas, and we have a phenomenal program right now based in the New Haven area, and we're trying to expand it into Bridgeport and Danbury and Stamford. But this is a program that we've been able to really partner with the city of New Haven and the Board of Education, and they fully support this program. And this is us working with these kids, you know, as a lot of times are termed at-risk youth, who we're not only running, you know, teaching them traditional scouting things, but we're working with them on STEM and we're working with them on robotics and all of this type of thing. And we're doing it in an after school scenario, and the parents love it because, you know, we're engaging their kids at an early age, starting in kindergarten, and putting that STEM and that robotic and all of that into play. And it's really exploded. And the support that we're getting from the city and the school board and the principals of the schools, and they're just really excited about it. And it's really creating, you know, quite a buzz in the New Haven area. We have currently almost 1,300 kids that are in that particular program.
Well, that's great. Well, Mark, you know, so many times when we're learning about leaders in nonprofits, in industry, in community leadership, in politics, individuals who are our mayors and our aldermen and our council members and those who work for our communities, so many of them at one point in their lives or another were touched by scouting. And one of your missions is to instill a commitment of service to others that lasts a lifetime. That's not just community service. You know, you talked about you know, cheerfulness and qualities that really make a person who is a scout an asset as a friend and a neighbor. Let's talk a little bit more about that commitment to service to others.
Well, I think that is learned early on through the scouting program. We have, at its core, scouting talks about doing a good turn daily. That's all. That was kind of an old historic motto, but you know that goes into working with community, other community organizations. You know, I think of we do a food drive every year around Thanksgiving that is for the greater Milford, Orange, and West Haven and Woodbridge communities. And that's been going on for 15 years. And, you know, and we're feeding thousands of families, you know, every year at Thanksgiving. And, you know, if you think about everything that happened through COVID, we had a group of scouts in Darien that constructed and delivered over 2,000 face shields to local healthcare providers and businesses. And everything that we that's at the core of the program is about service to others. And you know, you think about Eagle Scout projects. You know, we on average, you know, you're looking at about 28,000 community service hours every year that are just served by Eagle Scout projects. And that's on top of everything else that your local pack or your local troop might go out and do on a weekly basis, just to do things in the community. And I think by instilling that at an early age, as these kids grow into adulthood, I think it just becomes part of their core being. And I think when they become adults, it's just very natural for them to think about how to engage in the community and get involved and be active. And I think that's really another thing that's really so important about scouting is those values that we instill into the youth and they carry on all through their life.
So we hear a lot about, you know, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Eagle Scouts. One of the areas that was intriguing to me was the Sea Scouts program, mm-hmm. which is part of the council, right?
Correct.
What's that all about?
Well, Sea Scouts, it's interesting. Not every council has Sea Scouts. In fact, this is the first council that I've been a part of that actually has a Sea Scout program. But basically, the program is for 14 and up to 18-year-old youth, so more of a high school-age program. But basically, it is teaching, it's running the scouting program on a boat.
Wow.
And so the kids actually get out and they're learning all about seamanship. They're learning maintenance of boats. They're learning how to sail. They're learning all of that, which is creating, again, the leadership opportunities and building skills and all of that. But there, again, it's a program that is so different. And in this part of the country, we have so many high schools that have competitive sailing programs that it just really molds right with those programs. And we have right now seven what we term ships, which would normally what you would call a troop or a pack. Mm-hmm. We call them ships. And every one of those is different because we have one that is a competitive sailing group. And we have others that are not. And they're just out there teaching kids to enjoy the water and enjoy sailing and boating in general. So again, it reaches a different segment of the youth population. Yeah. The other programs that people may or may not know about is our Exploring program, which has been around since the late 60s, which is all career education awareness based. And so you'll see Exploring posts that are part of police departments or fire departments or hospitals or whatever it might be. And the kids are actually learning hands-on about a career. And in many cases, those kids go on to those careers as adults. And so there are a lot of different aspects of scouting that most people really aren't aware of, that really are life-changing programs.
Well, bringing us to the end of our conversation, Mark Krause. Mark has been kind enough to spend some time with us this morning talking about the Connecticut Yankee Council. He is the Scout Executive and CEO with the Connecticut Yankee Council. And if you'd like to learn more about what this group may offer to a young person or a high schooler that you know, or to an adult who might want to get involved with mentoring, you can go to ctyankee.org. Mark, it was great to chat with you, and thank you so much for your great information this morning. Have a good fall and a good rest of the recruitment program. Take care. Thanks
Thank
for being
you, John.
Part
it was
of
my it. Pleasure. It was great speaking with you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.